Blog Talk Radio.
As the legend goes, an old Cherokee was teaching his grandson about life. He said to the boy, "A fight is going on inside me. It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, guilt, lies, superiority, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you, and inside every other person too." The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed."
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening, especially if you're all the way in Mexico. ¿Qué tal? Bienvenidos. Welcome. Hola. Oki. Namaste. Welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. My name is Will Green. Hopefully you can hear me okay. Holding down one half of our hosting duties. I'm broadcasting all the way, like I said, from Mexico. Holding down the other half of our hosting duties, like we do every Monday and Wednesday night. We call him the Lions Historian. My best friend, believe it or not, my dad, Bill Green. ¿Qué pasa, papá? What's going on?
¿Cómo está? ¿Cómo está?
Bien, bien. ¿Y tú?
Ah, más o menos, más o menos.
Más o menos, that's okay, that's all right. That's all right.
And that is the extent of my skill at being bilingual, other than adios.
And mamacita, but we won't go there.
Oh, no, I don't mess with mamacita anymore. That's another story for another time.
That's one of those. For another time.
Yeah, every time I hear that, I cringe, man. What a highlighted, embarrassing moment, you know, in the saga and the ongoing saga of how is Bill going to put his foot in his mouth today? My man. Oh man. So how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing all right. You know, I'm still down here on the other side of the border, and enjoying my time, enjoying this weather, man. This weather is outstanding. You know, looking at what they're dealing with in Chicago. So I'm very thankful. But yeah, man. It's still something to get used to because, you know, it can get as high as 75, and then, you know, at night it's like the desert. It can drop all the way to 35.
I hear
you. You know, so you gotta be prepared for that because they will catch you. But I got no complaints. This has been a heck of an experience.
Yeah, I guess you don't. You're from Chicago.
It's all
drop
about
it
layers,
down,
you know, just layers.
Yeah, drop it down to 35, you know, at night in January in Chicago, man. That's like global warming. Oh, my man. Yeah.
Somebody will come out in shorts, you know. So.
Dig it. I'm glad to hear you're doing well down there, man. Outstanding. So you're going to give the folks the preliminaries?
Absolutely. Like I said, I hope everybody can hear me. We're working on, you know, some audio adjustments. But, you know, like the saying goes, one monkey don't stop a show. So we're going to keep it going here. But like always, we would like to remind everybody to first grab a pen and paper, a pencil and pad, a post-it note and a marker, I don't know, the back of an envelope. We want to make sure that, you know.
In front of me. Go ahead.
Normally I would have it in front of me if I was at home. So the post-it notes and back of my envelope. You know, but we like to make sure, ladies and gentlemen, that if you have any questions, that you write down those questions. We don't want you to forget anything. And who knows? You might even pick something up from our dialogue and our discussion.
Right.
Or you might have something you might want to share with us and the rest of the listeners. So we don't want you to forget anything, and we don't want to miss out on what you have to share. So make sure you grab a pen and pad. The second thing is that we really encourage all of you all to engage with us. We have multiple ways for you to engage with us. You can engage with us on the Blog Talk Radio site when we're live Mondays and Wednesdays. All you need to do is set up a Blog Talk Radio account, which you can set up for free. It will not charge you, and you can interact with us in the chat room. I already see Adam and Sue in the chat room. So, you know, as always, thank you.
Right
on.
Yeah.
Always jumping in there.
Yeah.
The other way, Adam, hey, Sue.
All right.
Another way is if maybe you like to keep your Facebook open. Some of you may have received some invites to the show, and you can engage with us on the event page on Facebook. Just click the discussion tab in the event and write down, post any questions, any comments, or anything like that. I've also included in the event page the phone number here, and I'm assuming that you all got a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, a post-it note, marker, back of an envelope, something to write with, because I'm going to give you our phone number. So our number here is 516-453-6094. I like to say it twice because it sounds so nice. 516-453-6094. And when you're ready to jump in with us, just hit one on your keypad, and your number will light up in our queue, and we'll do our best to bring you in, you know. As we always say, why use 100 words when 1,000 words will do? But get down on the show, but we always appreciate everybody's support. We ain't trying to dish you or forget about you, anything like that. So that's just our few reminders and announcements before we start getting into the skinny on tonight's show. How's that?
That sounds, man, I tell you, I learn something every time you do that. Wind up going through my checklist. Outstanding.
Write it on the back of that envelope, and I know you got one. Probably got
that. That's why I said you would crack up, man. A lot of my notes are coming right off of this envelope.
Hey, you know,
that's funny.
You know, I've grown up watching you do that. You know, some of your best catches were back of envelopes, man.
My man.
Yeah, my man.
Yeah, what a I'm sorry, go ahead before I, you know, start spilling my guts.
Oh, no, you're good. We can jump right into it. You know, I think you were just going to just touch on what a amazing
event.
Normally we do this. Go ahead.
Yeah, what I wanted to do was, what I want to do, not wanted, because obviously I'm doing it, you know, is to bring back the highlights Monday show, which I absolutely was just blown away by. And and of the millions who maybe missed.
Millions.
Well, man, it was an incredible hour spent in, for me anyway, learning about aspects of avionics that I absolutely had no knowledge of. And just for those of you who are listening in, we had a guest on the show, my nephew pilot, licensed pilot, Ray. And a lot of you don't know, maybe none of you know, probably none of you know, that Will is trained, has been trained as providing weather patterns as an offering to the pilots that Ogden Aviation, which operated and may still be operating out of Hartsfield Airport, Hartsfield International Airport, among Will's many other duties, you know, he would provide pilots with these weather pattern maps and whatever. You know, you did it, and I'm not going to try to get into how you explained it. Rather, I have you right here so you can go back over it again. But, you know, you in entering into that hallowed, you know, cockpit ground, you know, and it was an exclusive service that Ogden Aviation provided for KLM, which I called Scandinavian, and Will and Ray said, no, Dutch. So I'm still saying Scandinavian, like, you know, people say, you know, minorities. Hey, and there's Jan in the chat room. What's up, Jan? And,
what's up, Jan?
You know, so, yeah, Jan's in the chat room. She said, good day, everyone. Right. Sue said, hey, and she put some cute smileys. Adam, of course, you know. Well, Adam's Adam. So anyway, just reflecting on that moment, I realized something in listening to you and Ray. You know, of course, Ray being a licensed pilot, he was explaining the altimeter, and then you were giving great examples of the altimeter using, you know, the movie Die Hard 2. To really bring in the focus,
yes.
Just what that looks like, and you both cooperated with each other about, yeah, that's just how it looks. So it wasn't just a video game, you know, it was special effect. It's really, yeah, that's what happened. But it was just the whole dialogue. But anyway, it dawned on me as I was listening to you two that I never talked about, and once again, thank you so much, Ray, for being so gracious, because initially I told him it would just be about 10, 15 minutes tops, and, you know, we let him go ahead with his night. And it wound up being a whole hour, you know, and I wasn't going to let it go, and I couldn't, you know, it was dazzling to me. But it dawned on me. I'm sorry, y'all, for, you know, doing what I'm doing right now. But I fade like that. You know, I drift. It dawned on me.
Come on, you good?
That I never talked to you about what it must have been like to enter into that hallowed cockpit ground with these Scandinavian with these Dutch brothers. You know, and literally telling them how to fly. I mean, I know you weren't telling them how to fly like they don't know how to fly, but where they need to be looking at going. And so I never asked you how they received your expertise. And I didn't even think to ask you what must it have been like as far as the reactive part on their part in having this young black brother step into their cockpit? I would assume that they had some culture shock issues going on. But, you know, the other part of it is I never thought until Monday that must not – it can't – it could – I mean, we're talking about what? We're talking back in the 90s?
Yeah, right before 9/11.
Yeah, we're talking over 20 years ago that I cannot believe there was a whole lot of black brothers and sisters doing what you did. So, you know, I'm really curious as to what the whole experience was like for you. You know, I mean, I don't know how you even got the job at Ogden Aviation. I would come down two or three times a year down to Atlanta from Chicago from doing retreats in the mountains. And whenever I walk in, I don't ever remember meeting anybody in the office. And I know it was a whole office, but you're the only one there. I remember there was one night, 3 hours, you was helping a guy locate his luggage. You know, I'm just thinking about all of what you had to have as responsibilities. But then this thing, what was it like? So, I'm putting you on the spot. I know I am, but that's all right. That's what fathers do to their sons. So, you know, we're talking about 20 years ago. We're not talking about, you know, we're talking about 20 years ago. Well, and you know, you were 20 years younger, so you were in your late 20s, early 30s. What was it like having to deal with these cats? And was there any repercussions, reactions? Was there any nonverbals? I mean, what's up, man? What was that like?
Yeah, it wasn't until Monday show, I think we followed up, and I was like, oh, man, I guess I was probably, I think it's safe to say, the only black person that was a airline operations manager. Was like, wow. You know, so, I mean, and ladies and gentlemen, that's what we do. You know, we applaud each other. You know, my dad applauds me, puts me on the spot, and I put him on the spot. And that's just part of the show. So, you know, bear with us, but that's what
okay,
it is.
Okay, but run that title back by me again. You were the what? The what kind of operations?
Airlines operation manager.
Man.
So when it, you know, when it comes to all of you all that sit on the airplane and you're watching people load the plane and you're sitting there still waiting on the gate, when are we going to leave? You know, I was the one who was in charge of making sure that your aircraft was loaded correctly, weight and balance was proper, you had enough fuel, you know, everything was copacetic. The flight pattern was cool for the pilots, you know, based on weather patterns or based on this and based on that. So every day for like a year and a half, I was responsible for over 200 people's lives every day. So it was quite a feat. You know, I started, Ogden Aviation is no longer there. They got bought out right before 9/11. But, May 97 was when I first applied for the job. I can't remember how I came up on it, but I remember the brother who helped me get the job. His name was Gary Upshaw. And I haven't talked to this dude, you know, I don't even know if he's still alive, you know what I'm saying? But I can, you know, I always remember this guy, Gary Upshaw. And he introduced me to a couple of people at the airport and filled out the app and got the job and started low level, working midnight flights, taking baggage claims for drunk people coming in on Air Jamaica. You know, started on the low level. And just worked my way up to check in, eventually checking in with KLM, and then eventually to check in, I would be at the gate, you know, I'll be the one making the announcements at the gate, welcoming people at the gate. And I think really that's where I had a chance to build a little rapport, you know, with the flight attendants and the pilots, you know. Because, you know, you always tease me about my voice, and I utilized it to the best of my ability. You know, I'd be on the mic, ladies and gentlemen, well, you know. So I
know that's right.
If you got a kick out of it. you know, it got to the point where, I guess, you know, I mean, hard work pays off, you know, and I would be the one checking in. Then I'll run to the gate. I'll check you in, see you at the gate, and then I'll be out there guiding the plane now, you know, a jack of all trades for real. And, you know, because of all that hard work, you know, that they offered me this promotion as an airline's operation manager. So, I mean, there were a couple of black people there. There's Brother Kareem and Lady Andrea. But there was, you know, a couple of French people. It's very international. So we had some French workers, Caucasian, some other people from different countries. So we were a plethora of different nations working together. So, you know, when I got the job, when I got the promotion, I think I got more side-eye views from my coworkers than the pilots. And I don't think that happened until I got on the plane with the paperwork. And I'm handing them the, you know, the paperwork, and you know they give you that look, but you're black, you know. but you know that was later, you know. So there was you know some struggle, you know. If you work with people and then you get promoted, you know, it's that inner conflict sometimes with people you work with and having to deal with that conflict with people you work with, you know, because they recognize your skill set is better than the other person. And it's nothing against them, but you know how it goes sometimes. But you know, so I went to Amsterdam to do some initial training, understanding flight patterns, clouds, different airlines, different aircrafts, you know, different aircrafts, different weights, just understanding how the weight and balance works on the aircraft, you know, fuel consumption, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I had an opportunity to go to New York. The year before 9/11 happened, I was in New York doing some more training. And in both those trainings, it was a bit of a culture shock because there were so many different people from different countries. But I was really like the only African American there doing this training. I think there were a couple of guys from Africa, you know, because we flew to Lagos.
Well, those were those were Africans. Yes, you know they got their own.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, go. Come on, man. Before
you
I can say
so from there. So, yeah, from our discussion Monday, it really hit me that, yeah, you know, I was probably the only person of color who had this position available. You know, just thinking back on the other managers, you know, it was pretty much a white operation. You know, it is what it is. But because I was skilled in mathematics and, you know, I'm a hard worker, you know, like you said, man, I'll be there 3 hours after everybody gone. And I'm still trying to find
everybody
back.
Gone. Yeah. No, I witnessed that.
I'm communicating.
Yeah.
I'm trying to communicate with people who don't speak English, you know, before we had translator apps. You know, and I'm trying to communicate with people who don't speak English, trying to figure out where they're going to be, what they got, where am I going to send it to, you know, stuff like that. But still was able to get the job done.
Amen.
It was definitely one of my proudest working moments living in Atlanta and in general, you know, period, really. I was very proud of that time. And yeah, I mean, people remember you. You know, I still talk to some people on Facebook, and they remember you, and they ask about you sometimes, but I've talked to them. But I know we spent a lot of time, just you and I together, you know, when everybody else wasn't there.
Yeah. And so, again, you know, what did you go to Amsterdam for? I kind of teased you Monday about that. What was the Amsterdam?
The original training in Amsterdam was just getting certified to be an airlines operation manager for KLM.
Yeah.
Training came directly from KLM. So that had to do with their different aircraft, 767, 737, 747.
Wow.
You know, understanding their size, fuel consumptions, weight consumptions. And just understanding how to balance the aircrafts. There was a lot of bags, you know. I mean, we're talking about people traveling from Amsterdam to Lagos, you know, so there was some heavy sleeping bags.
Right.
And again, understanding cloud patterns, you know, the things that a lot of meteorologists do that we see on TV.
Yeah.
All they do is
right.
kind of guess what's going to happen based on what the cloud patterns are and how the winds are shifting and stuff like that. And again, they just guess what's going to happen.
Okay.
Sometimes
right.
they
so
get it right,
here we are.
Sometimes they don't.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So here we are. Now, this is young brother out of ATL. Working for Ogden Aviation, dealing exclusively with this Dutch airline. So tell me, man, you're walking into the cockpit, pilot and co-pilot, seeing you for the first time. I ain't talking about down the road. I'm talking about first time. And I imagine that there were a few first times, you know, because I think they had more than one plane. So here you are. Now, you're laying this out, flight patterns, weather patterns, you know, telling them, charting out their course, so forth and so on. So did they just look at you like, oh, thank you so much, Mr. Green? Or did they kind of glance at each other and couldn't wait for you to step out the cockpit to hit up the tower, you know, to say, what's up? I mean, well, what was the treatment like, man? You know, you're being diplomatic here. You know, come on, let me have it.
Well,
let me hear it.
You know, like I said, I like to think that my demeanor at the gate, you know, first built the rapport so they understood the kind of, you know, they understood my work ethic. So when, like, this was the first time they seen me. That initial flight, you know, when I charted my first flight, yeah, they had that look. They couldn't hide it. You know, like, wait, what's he doing here? Where's the other guy? You know, and then
where's the other guy? That's what I'm talking about.
Where's the other guy? You know, I think his name was John. I don't know. You know, they're like, yeah, where's the other guy? You know, and later on he came behind me while I was still in the cockpit. So when he came up, it was a little bit of a sigh of relief.
Okay, we're all right after all. All right, that's what I'm talking about. Right. So let me ask you, was there enough, like, repeat performances? In other words, did a rapport build, like, after a while you were seeing, you know, the same pilots and co-pilots after a while,
yeah.
or was it
yeah.
always somebody new?
No, there was a steady rotation of different pilots, because there was only one flight in and one flight out every day.
Oh,
so
okay.
They
it
had a steady rotation.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
But it was every day, you know. So, yeah, there was a steady pattern of airline pilots and flight attendants. But actually, it was the flight attendants, I think, that was the hardest sales. You know, like, why are you coming on board? You know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You
okay.
Want to
yeah.
Shock them
yeah.
What? You know, because they're the first,
uh-huh.
first line of defense, as far as
yeah.
I think that was a lot more challenging. And Dutch women, you know, and I'm not trying to be sexist or anything like that, but Dutch women, man, they got big ankles, and they can hold their own, you know, so I wasn't trying to have no confrontation with these ladies, you know.
If you are being sexist, it's a new one on me. You got big ankles. Right on, man. Yeah, man, only a brother
can hold
say
their
that.
Own, man. You know, and they would not be messed with. You know, they were like the ladies that protected T'Challa and the Black Panther without the spears. You know, they were not playing around.
Man. Oh man, it's gonna take me a minute to reset. I did not expect it. Okay, all right, focus, Bill, breathe. So there was, after a while, a rapport that began to develop where you ever like,
yeah.
was it ever like, hey, Will, how are you doing? I mean, did it ever get to the point to where they were calling you by your first name?
You know,
name
no, like not really. Not really.
Okay.
No, not really.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe,
yeah.
you know, maybe, you know, but it wasn't like, you know, it was like, hey, good to see you again. You know,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Right,
it wasn't,
man. Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't like every time they saw me, it was like, oh, damn, this dude again. It wasn't like that. You know, it was like,
okay,
yeah. No.
Right. yeah.
You know, there was no,
all right.
really no emotion, you know.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it had to be some, you know, maybe not anything,
public.
Overt, but it had to be something. I mean, that's just culture. That's just the nature of coming to America, you know. One flight in, one flight out every day, though. Yeah,
and like any job, you know, you really don't get to prove yourself, if you will, until there's a problem that comes up. Mm-hmm. So it's like when those problems came up and I offered quick solutions, then, you know, they kind of come around here and there, you know, without the other guy's help. You know, when I was able to come up with something without other people's help, you know, then things started to change. You know, and then 9/11 happened, and, you know.
And then 9/11
happened. Plateau.
Yeah, and I still have a picture of you standing out in front of the Twin Towers, man. You know, in front of that that I don't even know what it's called, that design on the front of it. You know, a piece of that design survived the crash. You know, and you know, just the year before
that new you know, landmark that they have there in New York to designate that Ground Zero area. It was right there. That's why I took that picture.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's just, it's just, you know, I don't know if there is enough time ever allocated in family even, you know, to not just get so inundated with family issues. Of course, there are always family issues, but really having a, almost like an interview moment, you know, parents to children or whatever the case may be, not just to talk about, you know, employment status, but what the job really entails. And, you know, I mean, it's so much that to me seems so valuable to be aware of. And I kind of hit myself upside the head a couple of times after Monday's show that I never really got into detail with you. I mean, I saw what you did at Octon Aviation in part, but I'm not in the whole.
Right.
You know, I just kind of took advantage of you being there for other things that I was doing in the mountains and the people coming through the airport and them meeting you and you getting them over to the shuttle and things like that. But I never really talked to you about your airline operation manager duties. Yeah, I just always saw you running the show, but I never put it into any kind of context as far as responsibilities. I think I saw you mostly as someone who people were just unloading their duties onto you because you were so eager, and then they would just leave you holding, literally leave you holding the bag. Or the bags, you know.
Sometimes,
Sometimes. Go ahead.
I was going to say that was just, and that's just one of the challenges that one has to deal with sometimes with having that lateral promotion, where a lot of people, you know, will take it their own way. You know, like you said, man, like, I was in charge, you know, and really when it came down to it, it was my call, you know, and it was difficult for, like I said, more or less my coworkers at first just to get used to that kind of change. You know, even when 9/11 happened, I mean, you know, when 9/11 happened, I sent everybody home and I stayed at the airport, you know, just being that leader, you know, that you taught me to be, you and mom and stuff like that. Take your props, man. Take your props. But being that, you know, leader, it did take some time. It was a hard pill for a lot of them to swallow. But, you know,
Man, so, you know, I'm hoping that and in a couple of weeks or so that, you know, we'll be able to hook you and Ray back up again, you know, for a follow-up. Because, again, Monday's show pointed out the fact that, you know, there were over 2,800 flights canceled as of Monday's show. COVID continues to surge and severe weather has left its wake, you know, on the country. This chill in Texas has been a trip for me, y'all, I tell you. You know, this is my second go-round in Texas, right? My first time was back in 02, and I was told then that in Texas, you know, I was told we have two seasons. We have January, then we have summer. So I'm definitely getting, you know, January 3rd to 10th. But we also covered the fact that there were a number of flight delays, you know, as of Monday show, around 3,600. You know, 12,000 flights had been deleted. Now, I wanted to ask you, what does that mean? 12,000 flights had been deleted. Does it mean just what it says, like erased, no longer exist, forget rescheduling? What does it mean when a flight has been deleted? Or am I asking you an unfair question?
Yeah, honestly, I mean, it's just canceled. You know, it's canceled, and so it's just taken off the schedule, if you will. You know, there's still a record of the flight being booked, you know, but I guess I'm not exactly sure what the definition of deleted, you know.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
You know, so it's out of there, you know, it's taken off the book.
Well, that's what... Because this is obviously a separate, you know, a separate detail. 2,800 flights canceled, but 12,000, you know, have been deleted. You know, and then, you know, we also talked about the fact that staffing had been a problem primarily due to COVID-related issues. You know, 1,700 TSA agents, you know, have been out sick, again, mostly due to COVID. But then we moved to the other part, and this was another hunk of meat interview that you guys covered. You know, we spoke about the scheduled rollout of 5G, which was due to happen today, you know, but after ongoing pressure from the FAA, Verizon and AT&T, the big dogs, agreed to wait for the 2 weeks requested by the FAA to allow for additional research, I'm assuming. What do they hope to, do you have any idea what they hope to accomplish over the course of these next 2 weeks, more so than licking their finger and holding it up in the air to test wind patterns? You have any idea?
Yeah,
I'm asking you.
Yeah. Going to stick out the red thumb and see how it goes. Go to grab something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
know that there's some these mitigations, if you will, that they're kind of following. Based on what's going on in Europe, France is in
particular. Okay.
So I think they're just kind of seeing what's happening overseas, and how apparently they already are having this rolled out.
Okay.
I just haven't been able to confirm that 100%.
But
I know that they're looking at again European countries and seeing, you know, how it's going over there.
Yeah, well, I just kind of threw that out at you. That wasn't anything we had even discussed in our pre-show prep, you know. So unfair on my part to throw it at you, but I thought I'd throw it at you before you throw it at me. so maybe we could do a little bit of, you know, recap of that or follow up on that for next week.
But again,
okay, I'm losing you. One of the issues, y'all, all of the millions of you out there listening is, you know, there you are. Go ahead. Whatever you were starting to say, you just faded
out. I'm just glad that we're talking about this, because I think this is something that if people aren't aware of it. And I know there's so many different topics and things that's going on in the world, but we all
dress,
you know, and we all use cell phones. And, you know, this is something that can happen, and a lot of things happen. We don't know about it, you know.
Right.
This time, we're talking about and giving information ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost at real time, you know, which is, you know, it's a serious situation, you know, but it's about, you know, this money that is dangerous, you know, to people's lives and livelihoods.
Yeah, and that's really what the two of you covered, you know, and I think that altimeter instrument was really the focal point of just what we're talking about here. Yeah, you know, I just thought it was you know, humorous in a kind of sick way, you know, because Ray was talking about the purpose of the altimeter is the association of the plane with the ground. And he said he didn't want to be alarming,
yeah.
But when I think about plane and ground, oh, yeah, that's very alarming to me. You know, it's like, you know, gravity takes over, and that's that. You know, air brakes don't stop a plane in mid-flight. You know, so it's like I made a comment I didn't even know I made, and Jan, you know, brought it back on Monday. She said she quoted me, you know, I said, cross my heart and hope to fly. You know, I guess the other part of that is cross it again and hope to land, you know. But anyway, it was just, I just wanted to kind of go back over that again to some degree. But if you're cool, we can kind of shift out of that and just kind of move into the final phase of this particular show, if you're cool with that.
Yeah, I appreciate you, you know, giving me a moment here and putting the spotlight on me.
Hey, man, I just, man, I mean, yeah, I mean, you posted something, I think, today. And I can't remember exactly. I'm paraphrasing. You know, what was it that you posted about something, hidden talent or something that nobody knows about? Do you remember exactly how you worded it?
Yeah. I think that sometimes we need to give ourselves a round of applause and, you know, acknowledge something that you've done and something that you're proud about accomplishing that nobody knows about, you know.
That nobody knows, yeah. And that, when I read that, every
– yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. When I read that, it reminded me, you know, like I don't recall any conversations being had at any time over the course of the past 20 years that acknowledged the fact that, you know, you had, you know, a young brother doing something that I know doggone well is not a common conversation around the dinner table. And, you know, like, I'm assuming that if not the very first in the overall scheme of things around the country, definitely the first out of Atlanta to be doing that with, you know, yeah, I know you say KLM, I just have one flight in and out every day, but you didn't see any other brothers or sisters meeting with pilots, you know, and I'm sure if you had that would have been a conversation you all would have been having. You know, the teaching pilots how to deal with weather pattern clubs. You know, the African American teaching pilots how to deal with flight patterns. You know, so, you know how we do. So, man, anyway, I just wanted to just applaud that. You know, as an acknowledgement of a particular event, skill, or experience in your life that nobody knows about. And, you know, I think that, yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
that's applause,
that.
Y'all. That's not wind,
that.
Yeah, blowing through the window. Right on, man. You know, I used to like to walk around. I still do at times, saying, you know, yeah, you know, I was the first black suit salesman at Carson Perry Scott, downtown Chicago. And I get that look like, huh? You know, but, you know, it's still moments happen that without acknowledgement, pass by as if they never did. And I don't know about you, and I don't know about everybody else who's listening in, but I think sometimes we give all of our glory away to other people's accomplishments, especially celebrities or athletes, you know, without, you know, really giving what you just said, giving ourselves an applause, you know, for a job well done. You know, and that needs to be recognized more than less, you know. So right on, man. I'm really proud of your endeavors and your accomplishments. And I know it's taken you a long time to accept the fact that your time spent in Atlanta wasn't lost time at all. You know, yeah, I know you didn't come back with that sheepskin, but, man, you came back with knowledge and experiences that the classroom could never even come close to sharing, man. So I'm really proud of how you weathered the storm, you know, of your time in Atlanta. Really, I really am. That brings me to another, unless there's something you want to say in closing before I shift off. We'll free
up. Come on. Yeah, no, you're good. Thank you. Again,
okay.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah.
Appreciate it.
You know, over the holidays, I was given a gift by someone who, when it was given to me, she said, opened this one last because it's kind of hokey. So you know what I did? I opened it first. You know, let's get to the hokey. And it was a map, a little map, not a, you know, big deal, a map of the native tribe, the native Indian tribes of North America, mainly the United States, not Canada, not Mexico. And I think that's the mistake made when we say North America. So many people are saying North America, meaning the United States, but thinking that the United States is all of North America. No. So I'm not talking about the Indian, the native Indian tribes of Canada or Mexico, but just within the borders and within the, you know, ocean frames of the United States. And looking at this map, you know, pushed me to do, because I was trying to count the number of tribes. I counted the number of Indian nations, and it was well over 14. But the tribes, you know, numbered over 570. And of the remaining tribes, there's about 150 spoken variation of spoken languages among the remaining tribes. But at one point, at its high point, over 570 tribes spoke over 460 dialects. Okay, that's just information. But I'm looking at this map, and I'm looking at the vastness of these tribes. And, yeah, I have one question, what happened? But, of course, I know the answer. But the other question is, so where was I in my awareness during all of the time that these folks were being, you know, destroyed? You know, I know there's other words that are used. You know, they're being killed off. You know, we mentioned on the show that there was like a 300-year Indian war that went on. You know, and most people don't think in terms of it being that long. Like, you know, that starting in the 1600s and ended right around 1890, almost right at the beginning of the 20th century. You know, at the close of the 19th century, that's, you know, I think the massacre at Wounded Knee was like the one of if not the last onslaught, you know, slaughter, massacre of the Indian people. But I'm thinking in terms of me, and I want to get your thoughts on this as well, man. I don't want to turn it into just a self-purging. And maybe there'll even be somebody out there among the millions who might want to even make a comment as well. But, you know, I grew up watching Westerns. And I'm talking about, you know, born in 1947, gained some degree of consciousness probably in the, you know, early 50s, mid-50s, you know, definitely at an impressionable stage in the late 50s. And I'm watching these Westerns, cowboys and Indians, and the cowboys were always the good guys. And the Indians were just this collective that I only thought of it as being just one big group of people called Indians. and they just all were the same as far as their behavior, their demeanor, their attitude, and they were hateful, they were savages, and they were without a god, and they just killed white people, you know. And I didn't even consider, well, did they kill black people too? You know, I didn't even consider, you know, what a black scout would look like on a lodge pole, anything like that. You know, I'm just thinking it's one, you know, homogenous group. You know, not even thinking. And then sometimes some movies would point out, you know, Hurons on the East Coast or Apaches down, you know, in the Southwest, or the Sioux up around Montana and South Dakota, in the area where Custer was massacred. But the Paiutes, you know, which was a nation in itself, and the tribes that fell under that, and the Cheyenne and the Comanche, and, you know, that were their own, the Kiowa, the Pawnee, the Sioux, yeah, which we meant the Crow, the Shoshones, the Utes, the Navajos, you know, the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the Shawnee. You know, I never thought of them as being like their own cultural group, so to say. it's kind of like Africa of the past, you know, that had so many different languages and so many different tribal customs and so many different names, you know, the Mandingo, the Igbo, you know, and you know, who even knows today how many there were, you know, but similar to the Africans, how they were just kind of, not kind of, how they were, you know, decimated, you know, genocide, you know, just erased. But we do know that it was a 300-year Indian War, and we do know that there were over 570 Indian tribes. But what I don't get is how that never became a part of my consciousness, how I was so okay with Indians just being, you know, the bad guys, you know, and somehow didn't deserve to have the land. I remember being taught early in school by one teacher, and we did a show on Manifest Destiny, and it reminded me of her comment that, the Indians weren't doing anything with the land, and it was a time of industry, you know, and therefore, you know, the land wasn't taken from them. The land was cultivated and developed and, you know, industrialized to allow us to live in the luxury we live in today. And I guess my child's mind was relieved to hear that, saying, okay, so I don't have to feel guilty at all. But I'm black, you know, and my people are still dealing with the very thing, you know. So anyway, this little map just really cracked my skull open to think about all of these collisions, you know, of cultures, and how, you know, this white dominant race, not necessarily by number, but by inflection of values, has just created this false reign, you know. But I'm just, you know, I'm blabbering. Any thoughts about that, man? You know, as far as its impact on you, or did you grow up more sensitive to the issues of Native Americans?
No, I didn't until later. You know, I mean, growing up, you know, in high school, going to Upper Bound, you know, I started to become more knowledgeable when it came to the African ancestry history, you know, things like that. But I was never really tuned into the Native American struggles. You know, and it was cool to listen to you and Uncle Mick and other people talk about, you know, our bloodlines and the mixture of different cultures we have. But I never really put a whole lot of thought into those struggles and manifest really wasn't, you know, they really, I mean, you know, later as I got older, of course, there was some awareness and understanding the struggle, especially when, you know, there's low numbers now, you know, and it's, you know, you got these pipelines messing up this sacred land and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we're talking about a whole people being confined to reservations, you know, so, you know, you know, and have an absolutely no understanding of what that means. You know, it's like concentration camps, man, you know, in my estimation.
And, you know, so looking at what we discussed last year, Manifest Destiny, and, you know, the lack of history that's being written, how they're being written out of history, and a lot of other people are written out of history.
Yeah.
Being down here in Mexico has opened me up to some things too. You know, the way that they preserve as much tradition as possible. You know, from buildings, you know, cultures and the way people do things. You know, and even seeing people walking around, you know, and still kind of have that little bit of that Native American look. You know, and it just makes me think about that, you know, that preservation of tradition and that preservation of history that a lot of cultures lack now because, you know, they're being pushed out or put in concentration camps and being limited to, you know, the backyard. That's as far as you can go.
So, one of those, you know, we got about 5 minutes left. You want to wrap it up and start landing this airplane, so to say?
Did you have anything else you wanted to touch on as far as, you know, I know there was a piece of that that you wanted to kind of hit a little bit, you know, like the Rachel book and things like that.
Well, you know, what it did was raise an awareness as it continues to, for me, you know, like it's so easy to forget about it, people. You already said it. And I'm not going to, with the show's about over, so I'm not going to really spend a whole lot of time with this. Maybe next week we can pick back up on it. But it just reminds me that it's so easy to delete one from one's history if one's history is not known. And how can it be known if one isn't telling one's story? So, you know, I really want to speak more in future shows about the importance of, you know, what would be a way for especially black folk, man. I'm saying especially black folk because that's where my interest is, you know, whether some degree of black or whatever, however that pans out. I know we say people of color and all that. Well, yeah, okay, that too. But I'm saying black folk mainly because, you know, we're homegrown people that don't even think of ourselves that way. And we've never really had a clear definition of our stories, and we have millions of them, you know, millions, you know, but we only get a select few, yeah, and the select few that we get are always so specialized, you know that may not be an impossible target to hit, but I don't think one should feel so terrible if they aim for the stars and they land on the moon. But it's like, you know, with black folks, it's almost like this particular part of the world says, hit the stars or bust, you know, and I just don't think that's fair to the multitude of the people to have to shoot at such a high target without having a buoyancy of history to support the endeavor in the first place. You know, and if you don't know who you are, anybody can name you, right? And it's just, you know, even though we're called African American today, we really don't know what that means. We just accept the title because that's kind of been what we've been just taught. But, you know, like, really, if it came down to anything in a so-called democratic society, we should be American. And that should be all there is to it, you know. We should be American just like anybody else. But anyway, so, yeah, I would like to talk in future shows a little bit about the importance of putting our story out there. And that's what, you know, to me what made it so important that you talk about that experience that you had working at the airport and with Ogden Aviation, man. So, yeah. So in the future, yeah, I will circle back to talk about that a little more. Amen.
Cool.
All right, so land this airplane. Get that altimeter calibrated.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as always, we appreciate the time that you took to spend some time with Dad and I here on our live broadcast, and even those that are listening to the recorded show. I want to again thank you for all your support. Like we said, there's multiple ways for you to engage with us. We are always encouraging you to, you know, to kick it with us and all the different ways we have for you to talk with us and let us know what's on your mind. You know, we're open to it. That's becoming caller friendly, so it's okay. Give us a call. for those of you who did see the Facebook page, I posted a picture of Dad's map on the event page in the discussion piece. So,
okay.
So check that out just to give you a better visual on what he's talking about. And you can really see all these different nations and all these different people that occupy North America. So definitely check that out. And, you know, like it or love it or comment or whatever. We love to hear from you. So this is the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show, always trying to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking and experience a renewed self-awareness, maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experience, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. So that's it for tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen. Again, I'm Will Green, Alliance historian, Bill Green. We'd like to thank you all. Please be safe out there. Stay warm.
Amen.
Until Monday. We hope to hear you then. Good night, everybody.
Amen.
Love you,
Love you, Will.
Amen.
Adios.
Take care.
Okay. Coolio.